Good evening? Yeah, okay. I'd like to begin with reading an excerpt from my most favorite book of all time. It also has the best opening line ever. It was a dark and stormy night. In her attic bedroom, Margaret Murray, wrapped in an old patchwork quilt, sat on the foot of her bed and watched the trees tossing in the frenzied lashing of the wind. Behind the trees, clouds scudded frantically across the sky. Every few moments, the moon ripped through them, creating wraith-like shadows that raced along the ground. The house shook. Wrapped in her quilt, Meg shook. She wasn't usually afraid of weather. It's not just the weather, she thought. It's the weather on top of everything else. On top of me. On top of Meg Murray doing everything wrong. This is A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle. And yes, Ted Lasso fans, this is the book that Ted gives to Roy Kent to teach him a lesson about leadership. So I'm not the only one who loves this book. I can't pinpoint precisely when I first read this one, but I have a feeling it was in the spring of my fifth grade year because I desperately wanted to get my ears pierced. And my mom, following the example of another mother, basically said, if you read 6 Newbery Award-winning books and give me a report on each of them, you can get your ears pierced. So let's just say by the time I graduated fifth grade, not only did I have pierced ears, I also had a new favorite author and favorite book for life. I'll come back to that, Michael. Don't worry. Funnily enough, it wouldn't be until years later that I realized she was not only an award-winning children's author, but was also recognized for her novels and journals about spirituality and was quite the prominent Episcopalian and Anglican. But that came later. As a child, I devoured all of her works that I could find. And it wasn't just the plots or the characters I loved, and I loved them all, from the Murrays to the O'Keefes to the Austens and all the others in between. What I loved were the deeper messages in her books. L'Engle herself said, you have to write the book the way that wants to be written. And if the book will be too difficult for grown-ups, then you write it for children. In her books, every act of creativity is an act of light. Every poem, every painting, every drawing, every mathematical equation, every scientific breakthrough, these are acts of creation and individuality, and they are moments of light in an ever-darkening world of assimilation and, well, as she puts it, evil. Those moments of light help keep the darkness at bay. Then, of course, there's love. Love always, always saves the day. Love for our families, for our friends, for this planet and this galaxy and the universe we inhabit. Love for our enemies. And love for ourselves. This is what is most important, and it's only love that will see us through. By the time I discovered L'Engle's works, I was already a Christian. I had been baptized when I was 8, a choice I made for myself. Thank you very much. And I'd been to Sunday school since before I could even remember. I had amazing examples of what being a good Christian was in my parents and in my grandparents. I believed in God. I believed in Jesus's teachings. Everything I saw in L'Engle's books simply reinforced and put words to what I'd always believed. She just did it far more eloquently than my young mind could. So it was with this reinforcement of faith, I headed into the dark unknown that is middle school and high school and Wednesday night youth group. I felt awkward a lot of the time. Many of these kids had grown up together and went to the same school and did the same things, and I didn't know who DC Talk was. I felt a little out of place. But eventually I found a niche, made a few friends, and for the most part enjoyed myself. But every now and then someone would say something and it wouldn't sit well with me. Sometimes it was a passing comment that was laced with misogyny, homophobia, racism, or was just plain mean. Then it stopped being passing comments and became outright. I'll never forget the day my youth minister told me that there comes a time when we stop tolerating other people. It's okay. We're Christians. Therefore, we know better. By this time, I was 17, and I knew that this time he was wrong. My heart just sank in my chest, and all I could think was, finally, someone has finally said it out loud. They don't love everyone. And the kicker was, we were in the beautiful foothills of the Tennessee Mountains at Vacation Bible School, where we had been learning all week about God's love for us, his unconditional, all-encompassing love for us, and it just didn't add up. All the little digs and passing comments over the years, many directed towards me, suddenly stood out in such sharp belief. Every time I'd been told my friends were too weird. By the way, these were the math course and drama nerds. Of course we were weird. That was our thing. Whenever I'd been told I read too much. Don't read that, read this. Don't think that, think this. You don't play enough sports. You could stand to lose a few pounds. All of those moments where I felt less than just came back to me. And I thought to myself, where's God in all of this? I don't think I see him here. The fact is, you can be told only so many times in so many different ways that you don't belong before you start to realize that you don't belong. So I took what I've come to realize was one of the biggest leaps of faith in my life. I left. I didn't flounce out the door. I didn't yell. I didn't write a strongly worded letter. Well, I wrote one in my head, but I didn't send it. I just stopped going. I was 18. I had my own car. It was fine. And it hurt. And I missed what I thought I was supposed to have found there. Community. Support. But since that hadn't really existed, or if it had, it had only been some kind of lip service, that particular hurt didn't last very long. The hurt that lasted longer was the idea that by walking out of that church, I was walking away from God, away from Jesus, away from my spirituality, and away from God's love. I was leaving behind all access to God, because wasn't I? Wasn't that what I'd been taught there? That the church owned God? That the only place I could ever feel God was in those four walls, and if I didn't feel him there, then there was something very wrong with me and not them. Well, no, of course, none of that is true. But it's what I believed. And it's why I call my leaving a leap of faith. Because I knew that God existed everywhere. God's love for me was everywhere, not just with those people inside that structure. I knew it then, and I know it now. Thing was, is I didn't exactly have the words to reassure myself of this knowledge. I just knew that while what I was doing kind of felt wrong, it wasn't. I was following my faith, the faith instilled by me, and the faith instilled in me by my family and by God. And besides, life went on. I went to college, graduated, started working, moved to an entirely new country across the ocean, fell in love, got married, got divorced. I saw the world, this wonderful, different world. My faith remained. Even though I struggled to find the words to express myself, because that was another thing I felt I no longer had access to by leaving the church. The language, the prayers, the words, not just the words, the word. I found I had a hard time saying the word God. For a multitude of reasons. The main one being was that I wasn't sure I was allowed to. But over time, I came to realize that because I couldn't say his name did not mean he didn't know mine. Because he heard me. He always heard me. Even when I wasn't sure whether or not he was listening, he heard me. He heard me when I said, thank you for this life I'm getting to live, these people and places I'm learning. Thank you for the sea that changes every time I look at it. Thank you for the opportunities to travel and to explore. And I know he heard me when I stood in an empty hospital stairwell at 8 o'clock at night crying because the person I loved was in the absolute depths of despair. And all I could do was call out, please, please help me because I do not think I can do this. He heard me. He heard me and he kept working in my life. Through the good and the bad and through the times where I wasn't even sure he was there, he was there and he was hard at work. And now we come to the fun part. The part where I answer the question, you may all be thinking of, how on earth did I get from there to quite literally here? I mean, Claire, you know where you work, right? Well, as ever, I came to St. John's because my mom asked me to. I was back on my annual Christmas visit, and she said, guess what we're doing this Sunday? We're going to church. Yay. So I steeled myself. I'll be very honest with you. I put up every single shield and preconceived notion I could on the way over here. I had been so hurt before, and I was determined not to get hurt again. I'd come, but only because it was Christmas and I was humoring my mother. We get here, and I'm already predisposed to like people because Mom likes them and she had found a home for herself. So, all right, we'll see. And everyone is so nice and friendly, but this is the South. Everyone's always nice and friendly. Shields are still up. And then I walk into this space, this sanctuary, and it's beautiful. And the music fills my spirit in a way I hadn't realized I was missing. The shields lower, a little. Then it happens. The next biggest moment where my faith and my life intersect. First, a preacher stands up, and it's a woman. Already, I'm caught very off guard. And then she does the unthinkable. She quotes none other than Madeline L'Engle. Well, I'm floored. Okay, St. John's, I'm listening. What's the catch? Next thing I know, I'm coming back whenever I visit, and I'm feeling more and more comfortable saying the words that I've missed saying. I don't stumble over the Lord's Prayer, and it feels as though taking communion is something that not only I'm allowed to do, but it's right for me to do. Then comes the pilgrimage. Several of St. John's parishioners come over to England, and Mom asks if I want to join them, and well, I am a sucker for a cathedral, so yes, absolutely. Once again, everyone is kind and thoughtful and curious, and by the time I'm having a proper pint with Father Dave in a proper pub, most of my preconceived notions are out the window. However, in the back of my mind, I'm still wondering two things. First, this is church, and I was hurt by a church before. You're saying all the right things, and I'm feeling like I might belong here, but seriously, what's the catch? And secondly, like my previous experience, when am I going to be asked to compromise my faith and my morals and my beliefs and my ideals to satisfy yours? I'll answer this last question first. The answer is never. Not once have I been asked to compromise on anything. If anything, St. John's has challenged me to open up even further, to wonder even more, to love even more deeply. As for figuring out what the catch is, well, the catch is the word God is said a great deal around here. So I'm very much a work in progress. I spent so many years keeping my faith quiet. It's been a challenge to express it more openly. And that's okay. That's more than okay. Because this is a journey. Our faith story doesn't ever end. It's not a straight line. Sometimes we're cruising happily down the highway with the windows down and the radio on, and sometimes we're on the side of the road with a flat tire. And God's with me the entire time. St. John's is with me the entire time, supporting me and challenging me and educating me and, most of all, loving me, reminding me that I am, as Caroline Allen said in her incredible sermon this morning, a beloved child of God, and that God and St. John's wants me here, in the words of that amazing Baptist hymn, just as I am. So it is only fitting that I conclude with Madeline L'Engle, since I began with her. And this is an excerpt from her Crosswick Journals, her own faith story. And this is from book 3, The Rational Season. And I think she sums up my story in her own eloquent and poetic way. During my journey through life, I have moved in and out of agnosticism and even atheism as I become bewildered by what mankind has done to God. And so too often I see God in man's image rather than the other way around. But I cannot live for long in this dead-end world, but return to the more open places of my child's intuitive love of God, where I know that all the creatures are the concern of the God who created the galaxies and who nevertheless notes the fall of each sparrow. And it is from the darkness I cry out, God, and it is enough. When I think of the incredible, incomprehensible sweep of creation above me, I have the strange reaction of feeling fully alive. Rather than feeling lost and unimportant and meaningless set against galaxies which go beyond the reach of the furthest telescopes, I feel that my life has meaning. Perhaps I should feel insignificant, but instead I feel a soaring in my heart that the God who could create all this and out of nothing can still count the hairs on my head.